In Exodus chapter 12, if you'll look down there at verse 37, when the Israelites left Egypt during the night, they did so as a large body of people. Exodus chapter 12 and verse 37 says, "Then the children of Israel journeyed from Ramses to Succoth, about 600,000 men on foot, besides children." 600,000 men that left Egypt. So let's just estimate. Let's just say, okay, we count women and children, and let's just say there's 1.5 million people. 1.5 million individuals. How and what would you do to take care of 1.5 million people? Well, that's a lot of people to have to feed. So not long ago, we looked at the fact that God provided them manna every day for 6 days in a double portion. Remember? And then I plotted out what would it take in modern day times to be able to grow what would be needed the whole time they were in the wilderness until the time they entered the promised land. You remember? Well, he gave them food. And not only that, but he gave them water. And sometimes he gave them water out of a rock, which I'd like to see somebody do. But God did that, and so he gave them water. So I want to look at some very specific things that God gave the Israelites instructions to do that really wouldn't make a whole lot of sense. But when you factor in what has been learned in the last 300 and 400 years, or maybe a little longer, what God was asking the Israelites to do made a lot of sense. And so what I've covered up is that the title of the lesson is God's health instructions. God's health instructions, the ones that he gave to the Israelites. Well, let me talk to you about this gentleman. This is Dr. You can read it. I'll just let you butcher that one in your mind. I'm not going to try. He was a Hungarian Jew. So that gave him a strike right off the top of the list. But he became a doctor in 1844. And in 1846, he began working at the General Hospital in Vienna in the maternity clinic. Sadly, what was going on is about 13% of the women giving birth were dying of what they were calling childbed fever. So to put that in perspective, ladies, that's 13 out of every 100, or 1 out of every 6.6, so anywhere between 1 out of 6 and 1 out of 7 were dying while giving childbirth. Well, the hospital had two clinics in it, and the first clinic in the hospital had a much higher death rate than the other clinic did. One of the clinics, the first one, was actually the medical students that were leaving they were over here cutting up on dead bodies. They were over here doing autopsies. And they would leave that and they would rush in to deliver a baby. And so Dr. Selma Wise, started thinking about why and what was going on. Because what was going on in the second clinic was it was midwives that were giving birth. And the death rate was lower, but it was still high. And so as he began to watch, he discovered that as the first clinic had this greater mortality rate, he started realizing that that was the medical students, and what they were doing is they were leaving that autopsy room and they were entering the maternity ward to deliver babies without washing their hands. Now that's probably making you gross. And aren't you thankful that somebody started thinking about these things? So what he did is, and what they were doing unknowingly, is they were transmitting germs and they were causing the child fever. And so what he did is he said he instituted a strict, you've got to wash your hands. You've got to wash your hands. Well, when they did, and it was easier to convince the midwife's side than it was to convince those medical students to do that, and the doctors overseeing all of this. But when he enforced this, it dropped to 1%. 1%. Now you're talking about 1 out of every 100. And so you would think, well, that's a good thing. But he was ridiculed. He was also, because the superiors thought that wasn't their theory, and therefore what he was suggesting was ludicrous. And not only that, they were, and you can just see the arrogance of men, they're also very perturbed that he's constantly telling everybody, wash your hands, wash your hands, wash your hands. And so, what is going on is he lost his job. It finally reached the time that they were so annoyed, they got rid of him. And what he did is he went to a different hospital in Hungary, and he did the same thing, and their mortality rate dropped to less than 1%. Well, it wasn't until, remember, he started practicing and observing all of this in 1846, but it wasn't until 1861 that he published the findings of his work, which still did not receive any recognition until sometime later. And you want to know where his life went? Tragically, he died in an insane asylum at 47. They thought he was nuts. But in time, his work has been recognized as vitally important to understanding how microscopic germs cause disease. And his contribution has been called, and I quote, "the single most important contribution to medical science and practice in the development of germ theory." So this doctor was onto something. Now, if you go to our scripture reading in Numbers chapter 19, and what Tommy has read for us, in Numbers 19, God is giving specific instructions to the Israelite people about what is supposed to be done when you have been around a dead body. So there, beginning in verse 11 through 13, he says, "He who touches the dead body of anyone shall be unclean 7 days. He shall purify himself with the water on the third day, on the seventh day." And so we understand now that the touching of dead body can cause the spread of infectious disease. But not only that, but God was talking about how the unclean person needed to use this water of purification, and he had to do it on the third and the seventh day. And he says, if you don't do that, then you're still unclean. So God was giving these instructions. And then in verses 1 to 10, and we won't take the time to look at it, but verses 1 to 10 is the actual instructions that God gave in the making of the water of purification. And one of the things that Brother Richie pointed out in particular to the various things, and in fact, let me read just a little bit here with regards to what it says. This again is in Numbers chapter 19, verses 1 to 10. Let's look at verse 5. "Then the heifer," well, actually 4. "Eleazar the priest shall take some of its blood," that's of the heifer that's been slaughtered, "sprinkle some of the blood, even 7 times directly in front of the tabernacle of meeting. Then the heifer shall be burned in his sight. Its hide, its flesh, its blood, and its offal shall be burned, and the priest shall take cedar wood and hyssop and scarlet, cast them into the midst of the fire, burning the heifer. Then the priest shall wash his clothes, he shall bathe in water, and afterward he shall come into the camp. The priest shall be unclean until evening. The one who burns it shall wash his clothes in water, bathe in water, and shall be unclean until evening. Then a man who is clean shall gather up the ashes of the heifer, store them outside the camp in a clean place, and they shall be kept for the congregation of the children of Israel for the water of purification. It is for purifying from sin. And the one who gathers the ashes of the heifer shall wash his clothes and be unclean until evening. It shall be a statute forever to the children of Israel and the stranger who dwells among them. So there's a lot of washing going on. But in this, he says, here's how you make this water of purification. And he says it is for sin. But one of the things I want to point out here is there are antiseptic properties that are found. Specifically, as I was looking at hyssop, which is thymol and carvacol. And as I said, I apologize for those who snicker because I don't even come close. Carvacol, which are used to kill germs today. Do you, anybody remember the Listerine slogan? Just think about that for a minute. It's been around for a long time. It kills germs that cause bad breath. And there it is still on the bottle today. Kills germs that cause bad breath, and now they say, and plaque. Well, the active ingredient in one of them is thymol. Well, let me tell you who Dr. Joseph Lister is. He's the one who invented Listerine. Well, Dr. Joseph Lister is known as the father of modern surgery because he introduced the sterilization of instruments. Aren't you thankful for that? And not only that, but what do they do before they poke you with a needle or before they do any type of surgery? They take and they go like this, and all of a sudden your arm's all brown and purpley and all that kind of stuff as they put that antiseptic on there. What are they doing that for? They're killing the germs. Well, these are the things that nobody understood until the modern times as they begin to see them under the microscope. Could have gone that direction. I actually did some searching into who invented the telescope. And what you find is somebody had the idea first, and then it kind of develops to where it's really getting down there. And so you got that guy as well. And then you see who actually first saw the moving germs and those types of things. You're talking in the last 200 years that this kind of thing has become known. And so you've got Joseph Lister, the doctor, who introduced sterilization of the instruments and the patient's skin before surgery using phenol, which is the antiseptic. So he is the one, even when you go to the barber shop, what do? Cut your hair, stick their scissors in some kind of antiseptic, stick the combs in there. What's that for? It's to stop the spread of germs. It's to stop and it's to kill things. Those types of things were not practiced for a very, very long time. One of the things in the waters of purification is scarlet wool. And that's in verse 6. And what I understand that does, and again, this comes from some information that Brother Richie provided, is when it's burned, what it ends up doing is it ends up creating a hard little ball. So when you add that to it, you have some grit. Now, I don't know about you, but when I get my hands all dirty from working on the car or something, I've got some Gojo or some orange gel out there that's got some grit. In fact, I hate the big bottle I have. It's ancient, and most of the time the grit won't come out anymore. So what I came up with is everybody's probably familiar. In fact, ever since I saw this, I'm like, that's what I want, Lisa, and I want it right at the kitchen sink. And she hates that I clean my hands in the kitchen sink, and I keep saying, well, I don't have something out in the garage. You know, get me a nice thing that's got a drain in the garage, and I'll clean up outside. But what is it about the soap? That's different. It's got the grit, right? Well, that's kind of what you're seeing in the waters of purification is, and again, just looking at all of this, what God is doing. The point I'm making is that God is giving the children of Israel instructions to stop the spread of disease before men learned anything about germs. Didn't know about these things. But God is providing instruction. You can't be around a dead body and then go do these things. And part of it becomes the understanding of what happens to you in this idea of you are unclean in the eyes of a holy God. So there's a spiritual thing as well that is found in these. But I think most of us know, if you've watched any type of history, you understand that most men in the Civil War did not die from the gunshot or the bayonet. What they died from was the horrific practices in trying to treat them. There are major historical figures that died. I understand, if I'm not mistaken, I think Brother Rich even mentioned maybe Washington, George Washington nearly died because, or maybe did die, but that's another thing. But I was reading about some of these different generals and so forth, and what they died from was not the bullet wound. It was the infection that came from all of these men out in the battlefield going from one person to the other, sticking their hand in there, trying to dig out the bullet, and then creating all kinds of disease, and that's what killed them. Or taking a saw and cutting a guy's leg. I think most of us have seen this, not trying to be gross, but what was killing them was the germs and the infection. But notice in verse 14 of chapter 19, this is the law. When a man dies in a tent, all who came into the tent and all who were in the tent shall be unclean 7 days. And every open vessel which has no cover fastened on it is unclean. If it's something sitting out and it's not covered, then that's going to be unclean. And why would that be? Well, that's food contamination. Because when there's death, what comes around? You know what comes around when there's death? Flies. Flies. And what have we learned about flies? They transmit disease. Speaking of flies, what about human waste? Now, I'm not trying to be gross. This is a reality. What about human waste? Flies breed disease. E. coli, food poisoning, anthrax, typhoid is the some of the things that are transmitted. So I started looking at this. I started trying to say, well, what can I find about this? And what I found is that this particular campaign in 1915, 1916, in World War I, in the Gallipoli campaign, I found this quote. Disease swept through both Anzac and Turkish forces at Gallipoli, diphtheria, tetanus, septic wounds plagued the soldiers and necessitated the evacuation of thousands of men from the battlefield. The latrines were opened and rudimentary. There were no bathing facilities and few opportunities to wash bodies or clothes. The lack of sanitation in the Anzac areas caused the rapid spread of dysentery, known as Gallipoli Gallop. The unburied corpse in and around the front line areas were the perfect breeding ground for flies. These were almost unbearable in the summer months. The flies were so thick that soldiers could not eat without their biscuits and jam being blackened with flies. Flies spread disease rapidly through the troops, living in cramped, overcrowded trenches and dugouts and unable even to wash their hands. Now you're thinking, why is he bringing all that up? And again, I'm not trying to be gross, but flies in food and waste are the breeding ground for disease. So my next thought was, hey, I wonder if I can find anything about what are the regulations when it comes to our military, which is something Tommy's probably had to deal with, and others who have served in the military, as we've been remembering those in recent days who have served our country. And I found this is the Army Field Hygiene and Sanitation, page 15. Collection and handling and disposal of liquid and solid human waste. Failure to properly dispose of human waste provides a fertile environment for filth, flies, rats, mice, and other disease-carrying pests. Prevention of disease is relatively simple when basic sanitation practices are established and enforced. When soldiers use latrine facilities, the problem of pest is minimalized and eliminated. And I'm not trying to be gross. What I want us to understand is this. God gave instructions to Israel in Deuteronomy chapter 23. So turn over to Deuteronomy chapter 23. Beginning in verse 9. When the army goes out against your enemies, then keep yourselves from every wicked thing. If there is any man among you who becomes unclean by some occurrence in the night, then he shall go outside the camp. He shall not come inside the camp. But it shall be when evening comes that he shall wash with water, and when the sun sets, he may come into the camp. Also, you shall have a place outside the camp where you may go out, and you shall have an implement among your equipment. And when you sit down outside, you shall dig with it and turn and cover your refuge. For the Lord your God walks in the midst of your camp to deliver you and give your enemies over to you. Therefore your camp shall be holy, that he may see no unclean thing among you and turn away from you. And you read that, and basically he's saying when you go out, you take your little implement, you dig a hole, you go to the bathroom, and you cover it up. Now, why would he tell them that? Why would he tell them to do something like that? I watch my dog in my yard. And by instinct, she will scratch, or a cat. And by instinct, they try to do what we're talking about. Now, why is that? Because our Creator knew these things. We sing the song. God holds the germ within his hand. Though men may search, they cannot find. For God alone does understand. How did God care for the Israelites out in the wilderness? Remember 1.5 million people that left Egypt? You might look at and search online the greatest miracle. And what you'll find is, if you can find that, you'll find someone that has calculated what it would take to feed 1.5 million people out in the field. So again, what we're seeing is God giving instructions back in the days of Moses that we don't have any understanding as to why until we get into modern times and we start learning something about the transmission of disease and the problems of flies and those types of things. Now, one last one to look at is God gave instructions to Israel with regards to quarantine. And I think all of us have learned an awful lot over the last few years about what it means to be in quarantine over the last 2.5 years. We are very familiar with what we're trying to do now. In my lifetime, I know that if I had the mumps, or I had the measles, or I had the chicken pox, which I had all three, and I had brothers all around me, well, we were put in bed in our room to try to stop the spread of chicken pox. In fact, I still remember going to lunch down the steps, and I passed my brother coming from lunch, and as he went by me, he says, "You have chicken pox." And sure enough, I had the chicken pox. He looked at my face and realized I had spots all over it. So you were quarantined. I didn't go to school. I had to stay home. So we understand this, but we have a really good understanding today. Well, in Leviticus chapter 13, we have God's instruction, and we know and understand the quarantine that God gave with regards to someone that had leprosy. And so let's look at this for just a moment in verse 45 and 46. So in 45 and 46, it says, "Now the leper on whom the sore is, his clothes shall be torn, and his head bare, and he shall cover his mustache and cry, 'Unclean, unclean.' he shall be unclean. All the days he has the sore, he shall be unclean. He is unclean. And he shall dwell alone. His dwelling shall be outside the camp. So God, when this disease came, he said, you've got to isolate them. You've got to put them outside of the camp. Because this is something that is very contagious. Do you think they understood anything about this? As to why God would tell them these things some 3,000 years ago? The explanation for these medical instructions to stop the spread of disease is coming from God Himself. Way before what was learned in the 19th century, when man began to understand the spread of germs. I want you to look as well, the other passage that is there, look at Numbers chapter 5. This is just with regards to open wounds and things of that nature. God's speaking to them about these things. In Numbers chapter 5, verses 1 through 4, and the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, command the children of Israel that they put out of the camp every leper, everyone who has a discharge, whoever becomes defiled by a corpse. You shall put out both male and female. You shall put them outside the camp, that they may not defile their camps in the midst which I dwell. And the children of Israel did so and put them outside the camp, as the Lord spoke to Moses, so the children of Israel did. So quarantine was something that as major pandemics came hundreds of years ago and they started figuring these things out, they started learning how to isolate and quarantine individuals, keep the sick away from those that are healthy. And so you can see how man began to understand this in what we might say in more modern times. I have one other quote, and the lesson is yours. This is from a Dr. M.R. Dehan, who received his M.D. from the University of Illinois Medical School, was a practicing physician for many years before becoming an evangelical preacher, expands on this central point. It says, we ask the question, since Moses was educated in all these Egyptian superstitions, this is just something else to think about. Moses was trained and brought up, we learn in Acts chapter 7, verse 22, he was brought up in Egypt. Pharaoh's daughter had taken him in. Stephen tells us he was brought up in all the Egyptian ways. And yet, the Egyptians practiced all kinds of hocus-pocus junk when it came to these things. So my point here is, as he goes on, he says, how does it happen that he, Moses, does not teach or recommend these remedies in his writing? How is it Moses isn't throwing in all these things he had learned from the Egyptians on how to practice health and how to treat patients? Although he deals in detail and great length with diseases, the treatment of infections, leprosy, running sores, yet the illusions, deceptions, gross errors, and superstitious concerns, anatomy, physiology, pathology, treatment of diseases as taught in the highest schools of learning in Egypt, from which Moses was a graduate, are never taught or even suggested in the books of Moses. But instead, the instructions Moses laid down for Israel were utterly at variance with the accepted practices of that day and fully in harmony with modern-day scientific facts. And you just look at that and you think on that. That's where I'll let you do your own research. But what his point is why didn't he throw in all the things that were the practices and modern-day practices of his time? He didn't do that because God was the one saying, here's what I want you to do with my people. And as we've just showed in a very small way, what God told them to do through Moses fits with modern day practices today. And so that isn't by, there's such a big thing today, science and science and science. The Bible is always right when it comes to all of these things. Man doesn't, when he finally does figure something out, he finds out the Bible already talked about it, perhaps. And if it spoke about it, it's in harmony with what they've learned, even in our modern times. I've said often, and we'll close, the Bible is an amazing book. And what makes it an amazing book of books, Bible, is that it's from the mind of God, who created all of us, who spoke into existence, "Let there be light. I'm going to divide the light from the darkness." He spoke all of these things into existence. Takes dust and forms man and breathes into man the breath of life. This is the God that we serve. And just like the lesson this morning, when we talked about the great flood, I think these kind of go hand in hand. All of this makes sense when you understand that God is God, and He is in control, and all of the things that the Bible say explain all the world around us. Don't let anybody try to convince you otherwise. Because if you'll put the time into the Scriptures, you'll find that they are true. And every man, even if he's got a DR in front of his name, Brother Morrow gave me a good joke on the way out about doctors. And it's just a DR. We're talking about the awesome God that we serve, the Creator of all things. If you're here tonight and you're not a Christian, we want to encourage you to obey the gospel. Brother Steve has selected a song. We're going to sing that song. We're going to invite you to come forward and to confess your belief in Christ, be baptized for the remission of your sins, wash your sins away. We encourage you and hope you'll think seriously about doing that. Today is a great day for you to be a child of God, to put sin behind and to serve the true and living God. If you're a child of God and something's amiss and we can help you, we invite you also to come as together we stand and sing.